My name is Jerry Stairs, and I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be sober. My sobriety date is June the 5th, 1985. My home group in Lebanon is the sobriety first group. And I want to, before I get into my story, I want to do a little housekeeping. I want to thank you, Milton, for inviting me up here. He's been trying to get me up here ever since I lived in Memphis, and it's been my loss, believe me, and it's been a wonderful weekend. Also want to thank Harold for the coat I'm wearing. I went off and left my coat at home. Milton asked me to wear a tie, and I said, well, I'll be glad to do that. And so I get up here, and I got to look at it, I thought, where's my coat? So anyway, Harold looks a lot better in it than I do, but I appreciate it very much. If I can, I'd like to take a... Sometimes I get emotional. I don't apologize for that anymore, but I'd like to take a few minutes or a few seconds, a moment of silence for all the mothers throughout this country and the world, those that have gone on and those that are still here. Thank you. You know, they say your best friend is you'll ever have is your mother. I really believe that. Truly believe it. I grew up in Northeast Arkansas, Paragould, Arkansas. A lot of people never heard of it. If you talk to anybody from Paragould that was back some years ago, they'll tell you what kind of drunk old Jerry was, and also any place that I ever moved to. Stayed there in Paragould until I was in my family. I had a younger brother and two younger sisters. Stayed there until I was in the second grade, and we moved to Detroit, Michigan. The reason we moved to Detroit was for my dad to find work. And before I forget it, my daddy was an alcoholic. I'm one of these that it doesn't really matter, but I really believe that it's hereditary, but it doesn't matter. If you got it, you got it. We moved to Michigan, and I got to, as I said, my dad to find work. And I was about 11 years old when he and my mother separated, and he moved back to Arkansas. And I got to running with the wrong group up there. I was telling Harold, I know about that other side of the tracks and getting in trouble as a kid. I had a junior high principal that evidently he saw something in me that... And I'm very grateful for it. His name, excuse me, it was Mr. Sivek. Anyway, he called my mother to school, said, you better get him out of Michigan before he ends up in reform school or something worse. My mother and her sister put me in a car, and remember I was sitting between them, and they took me down to the bus station there in Detroit and put me on a bus. I was in eighth grade, put me on a bus back to Paragould, Arkansas. And I think that was the first time that I really felt unwanted and alone. That I couldn't believe that was happening. It's the best thing that ever happened to me. I got to Paragould, and my dad was living with his parents, his mother and dad. He was a retired Baptist minister. My dad was bad into alcoholism. I never remember my dad abusing us other than verbally. Anyway, stayed there with my grandparents for a little while, and my grandfather passed away. And two of my aunts were in this little frame house, and I was in there with him, and my dad was out in the backyard, and he was down on the ground, he was drunk. And I told myself then, I will never, never will I get as bad as that sorry son of a gun than my dad laying out there drunk on the ground. And you know, before it was over with, I was just as bad or worse than my father. Now, thanks to God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, my father did, when he passed away in 1970, he had like 12 or 13 years of sobriety. My dad, right before he left Paragould to go to, because my grandmother couldn't take care of me, he was working on a garbage truck. One of the guys he was working on a garbage truck with had four sons, and I didn't know them. I'd never met them. My dad took me over to his house, And those people took me in, and I stayed with them almost all through high school. And they became family to me. My mother was still in Michigan. My dad had moved to Cleveland, Ohio. And I stayed there, and moving back to Perigo, a lot of good things happened to me. It's probably one of the best things that ever happened to me, and that was I was homecoming captain. I played in all the sports. I had a job. Worked every morning from 7 till 10 o'clock and played in all the sports. And it was just a great place to grow up. I see my parents weren't there, and in the 10th, 11th grade, I could go out and I could buy liquor, beer. So all the guys, they'd want old Jerry around because I could, they didn't have any repercussions from parents. And that went on, and then I think it was 6 DWIs back then. My first one was Thanksgiving night, 1958. We'd played our last football game. I was coming back from the C&R Club in Truman, Arkansas, and was arrested, me and two other guys. And anyway, that was the first of, I think I had 5 others. Arrested in Blytheville, Arkansas, twice in Oxford, Mississippi, once in Tupelo, Mississippi, and once in New Albany. I think that's all of them. And it always seemed like when that happened to me, I was going somewhere to see some lady that I knew. I just always thought when I got to drinking with all that courage, man, I just knew that they'd want to see me and so on and so forth. Well, after a while, I went to work for a manufacturing company there in Perigo, and they were they're a big corporation, real big corporation today, and they were then. They offered me a job to be the personnel director in Oxford, Mississippi. We were going down there and build a brand new plant. I remember I went to Memphis and picked up 2 of the vice presidents at the airport from St. Louis, and we got to... I'm 26 years old, I'm single, never been married. And that's like one of the sports announcers on TV says, Ole Miss, that's where Ole Miss is located, they said Ole Miss is where they redshirt Miss Americas. And they do have some of the prettiest women, I thought, in the world. Anyway, I get down there and they take me out to the campus. That night they had a big party out at this attorney's cabin, and one of the vice presidents used to live in Perigo before he went to St. Louis, and they started a dice game up a table against the wall, and they had all the board of supervisors, they had the city council, all the important people out there that night, and I started shooting dice, and he knew that I knew a little bit about it, and somewhere around 11 or 11:30, there's 2 people left in the dice game. That was me and the sheriff of Lafayette County. The sheriff was a former FBI guy from there, from Memphis, named Bon McElraith. They had all you wanted to drink out there. I got about 3/4 in the jug and got home, got to the motel, the Holiday Inn there in Oxford. And the next morning, I got to more money than I'd ever seen. I didn't have any money. I came from poor people. And I counted up, and this is 1969, I had close to $800 that I'd won shooting dice. The 2 vice presidents, now they'd take me out to Ole Miss, I saw all the good-looking women, won that money that night, and got all this attention from all the people there in the town, and they wanted to know if I'd like to move, if I'd take the job. They could have worked it just right. I'd have paid them, probably. So anyway, I packed up and went to Oxford, Mississippi. I'd never been there before. They took me down there, and that's where I met my first wife, and I used to talk a lot about it, and we had a daughter, Ashley. She's 37 now, and we don't have the relationship that I would like today. But it's a whole lot better than it was when I left that little girl at 2.5 years old. So, and that's thanks to God and this program. It would have never happened. I can remember one time I'll get to moving to St. Louis and Memphis in a minute, but I remember I was been sober about 6-7 years, and my first wife called me one Friday afternoon, and she said, "You're the most selfish, self-centered husband." I think, my goodness, she's been reading the big book, sure as the world. Anyway, Oxford was a great experience, except for the drinking, and you know, all my reputation was gone. While I was there, I bought an insurance agency. I didn't have any money. I've been living there about 2 years and went into one of the bankers there, and he said, "Yeah, go ahead and buy it if you want it," and I did, and big, big mistake, and marriage started going bad, the business went bad, drinking a lot. This was in 1977. I got a call from the former company that I'd worked for, Emerson Electric, and they asked me if I'd be interested in moving to St. Louis to be on the corporate level, to be one of their directors or their transportation division. Well, why not? I wasn't working, didn't have an insurance company, was gone, I was broke, owed everybody in Oxford. So I take off and I go to St. Louis. Now here was, and I was drinking a lot then, but here was my job. I was traveling around different parts of the country, meeting with these truck drivers. My sole job, my number one responsibility, was to keep them non-union, to keep the Teamsters away from them. Now, that can get a little bit tricky sometimes. Believe me, back then it could. And what we'd do after having my meetings with them, a lot of times my boss would go. After we'd get through, well, we'd take them out and buy them whatever they wanted to drink. So I did that that went on and on and then we had a big Christmas party. We'd bring all of our truck drivers and all their wives into St. Louis. In my department, I was in charge of that. We'd put them up in motels, and we'd have a band, a country and western band, and all they wanted to drink, and on and on and on. And on. And of course, again, I was drinking a lot then. Well, when I'd get up on Saturday night, give out all the nice door prizes to the ladies. The last couple of years, I got where I didn't remember what I'd said up there on the microphone. I went in one Monday to my boss, and I said, Gary Nager, guy that fired me eventually, is a good friend of mine today, and I made all my amends to him. But Gary, I went in one Monday morning, I said, "Gary, I really messed up, didn't I?" The other night, and he said, "Yeah, you really did." I thought Gary drank as much as I did, but evidently he didn't. But anyway, he told me, he said, "Some people thought you were funny." He said, "I thought you made a fool out of yourself." And I said, "That's Ray Davis calling." He said, "You're going to have to quit this drinking." I said, "Okay." Now, Gary and I, he went on a lot of these trips with me, and we're close friends. We're close friends today. He's in real bad health today. Anyway, that went on, and then every summer we had picnics for the families of all the truck drivers and their wives. I remember we used to have it in, Big Bend in Bowling Green? What is it? River Bend, whatever that place is. You know what I'm talking about, the park up there. Anyway, we go all over these places. Well, the biggest one we had was Kennett, Missouri, and Paragould, Arkansas, all together, and all the truck drivers and all of them around come in there. Well, I never will forget. My department, we got a big party bus for all the management we got on there. And I can remember just as well going down there that said, "Now, Jerry, you cannot afford to get drunk." I had 4 or 5 beers from St. Louis to Kennett. Went out to one of the truck drivers' homes, and he fixed up his old barn, had a bar in there and a dance floor and a jukebox. And I'd worked there in Kennett at one time in their plant, Emerson plant. Anyway, one of the guys that I knew, he put a bottle of vodka up on the bar. And that's the last thing I remember till the next morning. Now, the bus was taking us from the Drury Inn, which is right there in Hayti, Missouri. It's on Interstate 55, taking us to Kennett. Well, the bus left without old Jerry. Anyway, I thought, well, I'll call a cab and they'll take me over there. About that time, my boss and the operations vice president came over there and got me. I can remember just a little of it, laying on the back seat, up on the back. They were in the front and driving over there. And I was at that point where a lot of you know exactly how I felt. I needed a drink. And Gary, my boss, said, Jerry, you're not going to call the bingo today. That's what I did again with all the ladies. And he said, you're not going to have a drink today. You're not going to drink anything. Well, you know, to me, you don't tell an alcoholic that he's not going to have a drink if he's in the position and felt the way I did. I got drunk when we got over there. I don't remember riding the bus back to St. Louis. I got back about midnight Saturday night. I didn't go to work. I didn't talk to anybody Sunday. I didn't go to work Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. My boss and that same operations guy came to my condominium. He came in, he said, Jerry, he said, again, Gary was a good friend of mine. He said, Jerry, it's gone too far. The people in corporate know about your drinking problem. He said, you can either resign or I'm going to have to let you go. Now, here's insanity and how crazy. I knew that if I resigned, I'm not going to get any unemployment benefits. If he fired me, I'm going to get some unemployment. I went ahead and resigned, went that weekend, turned in my company card. Now, how insane is that? Anyway, that was in June of 1984. I didn't work again till the first part of 1986. A year and a half, I went unemployed. And I drank, and I drank. I was running out of money. It was horrible, horrible. Anyway, my life had been spent mostly, I guess, because I was so lonely and so afraid, and I drank a lot. Even then, anyway, when Gary let me go, you know the crazy thing when he left my condominium didn't bother me. It really didn't, because drinking was more important to me than anything. It was more than that job. It was more important to that daughter of mine. It was the most important thing in my life, by far. I went there for another year. But before that, after I'd been, Gary let me go about 2 months later. He kept me on the company insurance. And three of my buddies that Gary knew, they came to me one morning and they said, you need to go to treatment. I said, I'm glad you said that. I'm meeting with an outpatient person today. But anyway, they took me to the Highland Center there in St. Louis, and I went through 30 days there. And of course, I wasn't ready. No way was I ready. Stayed there for 30 days, and I remember my counselor, Janie West. Excuse me, I try to talk to Janie every once in a while. I remember the day before I got out, we were there and talking with her, and she had another lady from the company there talking, and she said, Jerry, you've done real well in here. You've talked, and you're doing good, and I believe you really have this program, and I'm giving it all this stuff, you know. And she said, young man, you're not kidding me. You're going to drink again. Well, I took offense to that. 2 days later, after I left, I was as drunk as I'd ever been. That went on for another year. And then what happened to me, and a lot of you have heard my story, but This is, I was there in my condominium. I hadn't bathed and I don't know when. Drinking, I got to that point where you got to have the drink, Harold, and you can't get it down. You can't not drink. And one Saturday morning, about 11:45, and somewhere in the last 24, 36 hours, whatever time, I got down and I asked God to help me. None of my friends wanted me around. It was my family. Nobody. I got down and I asked God to help me. Old girlfriend of mine, I had a relationship with 2 years before my first wife and I got married, was working there in Memphis for a fellow by the name of Wayne Reed at his interior decorating place. And she asked him, she said, Wayne, will you call my friend in St. Louis? That he's got a bad drinking problem. I ain't going to say what he said or what she told me. He said, no, I ain't going to call him. He needs to call me. She said, he won't do it. And she was right. I probably wouldn't. But one Saturday morning, I want to be sure you understand this. I had never met the man. I had never seen him. She had never mentioned his name. She, my former girlfriend, mentioned his name to me. He called me about 11:45 that Saturday. I didn't want to answer the phone. You know how you get. You don't want to talk to anybody. I was staying in that condo and trying to drink to keep my nerves halfway in check, which that was all over with. But shows you how a 12-step can work. He called me about 11:45 Saturday. Didn't want to answer the phone. Almost didn't answer the phone. You know, when you're in that shape, you don't want to talk to anybody. I certainly didn't. I answered the phone. He said, is Jerry there? And I said, this is Jerry. And he said, I'm Wayne Reed. I'm an alcoholic. He shared with me for 45 minutes. Not about me. First he asked me, he said, I understand you're having a problem with drinking. I thought, well, how in the world would he know that? And he shared with me for about 45 minutes. And he talked about himself, his strength and his hope and what he had done. That was June the 5th, 1985, and I haven't had a drink since. After that, that was in June, and after that I stayed in touch with Wayne. And so I mentioned the Mother's Day thing. I was 44 years old when I got sober. And I was broke. I had nothing. Having to move out of I'd moved from that condo to an apartment. I didn't have rent for the apartment. I did what all 44-year-old men do. I went home to live with Mama. I went to Paragould, Arkansas and lived with her. And my mother and I hadn't had a relationship for about 20-something years. And thank God we did since, well, I guess it was 82 or 83. I stayed there and with my mother for about, I guess it was 2 months, and I wanted to go and meet this man, Wayne Reed. And I don't know, it was during the week. I think it was in September. It might have been October. I drove over to meet him. I was telling Milton when I got over there at his business on Brooks Road, I'd never seen him. Again, I didn't know him except for us on the phone. He had another alcoholic was there with him. I'll say his name. He since passed away. Tim Buckley was there with him when I got there. And while I was there, after Tim left, Wayne took me to Harbor House. He was trying to help somebody else over there. And that started our relationship. I love Wayne Reed more than I've ever loved any man. Another thing that God was doing for me, and I hadn't worked in a year and a half. You know, you put out a resume, what have you been doing? You know, these things you get from Social Security shows how much you've made. Mine says zero for 1985, period. Anyway, I walked out of Wayne's business on Brooks Road, and I looked over there and I saw this sign. The company was MS Carries, a big trucking company. Wasn't real big at the time. I happened to know a guy from my hometown I talked to a couple years before that was, I didn't know if he was still working there. I went over there and I said, is Joe Barra here? He said, yeah, you have an appointment. The girl said, you have an appointment? I said, no, I don't have an appointment. She said, well, he won't see you. And I said, you tell him Jerry Stairs, you know. Tell him Jerry Stairs, he'll see me. Well, sure enough, here come Joe up there. And, well, you know, he came back there and took me back in his office. And he knew all about my drinking. He knew I'd been fired. You know, a small town like Paragould, then probably 18,000, everybody knows everybody's business. He said, are you about ready to go back to work? And I said, no, I don't know if I'm quite ready. I'm living with my mother, don't have any money. Sent out resumes, could not find a job. He says, I want you to meet my boss, a guy by the name of Mike Starnes. Well, I went on back home. A couple of weeks later, Joe called me and he said, aren't you going to come over here and meet Mike? And I said, yeah, I'll come over here. But anyway, long story short, I went to work for that company. First part of 1986, the company was very successful. I went to work for them. We had approximately 50 trucks. We sold out. We went public. We sold out in 2001 to Swift. We had 5,500 trucks. Is Brenda in here? I was going to get her a truck driving job. She anyway, stayed with her at that company. Now, the thing, when I moved there to Memphis, Wayne had his business right across the street, had a little coffee shop over there. Sometimes we'd meet there in the mornings. And I got a sleeping room over on Comanche and Getwell, real nice area of Memphis. Had a sleeping room with an elderly lady and stayed there 2 years. And Wayne and Sparky, everybody knows Sparky, they'd come get me. And we go to meetings. We went just about every night. We went to, my home group was Hickory Hills. First person I ever met at Hickory Hills was Joe Little. Went to Traditions, went to Hickory Hills, went to Turning Point, went to Big Book, on and on and on. It was all constant. They'd say, we'll be by. Well, after a while, Wayne's driving got a little bit shaky, so then Sparky and I started doing the driving. But anyway, so many good things happened there in Memphis. He taught me the program. And I was talking about the sport coat that Wayne always told me. He said, Jerry, if you have the honor to speak at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, you wear a sport coat. Now, he's got me in a sport coat. Milton's got me in a tie, and I'm going to town. But anyway, he bought a little condominium right down from where I finally bought a house. And I'm still single all this time. And I used to ask him, I'd say, Wayne, what about me going to Al-Anon? No. And he was a particular, too. He didn't want me trying to date anybody the first year or two that I was sober. Finally, I asked him one night, we were having dinner, I said, Wayne, let me ask you a question. I said, how many times you been married? It's either three or four or something like that. And I said, what do you know about relationships? Here you're trying to take care of me. But anyway, another thing he used to do, when I first 6-7 months, you don't see this happen in AA meetings much anymore, but he would tell me, he said, you just say your name, because you don't know anything. You know, we don't talk to him like that anymore. So I stayed quiet for 6-8 months. Then it was a mistake to let me start talking. But anyway, we built a relationship that, now he passed away in 1993. There's very few days go by that I don't think about him. I have a sponsor today that, well, we sponsor each other. That's told Arlene, friend that Steve H. in Memphis, and I told her when she sees him to really embellish how good I did today, because he needs to hear that. But anyway, stay there and lady in Al-Anon, Wanda M., worked at FedEx, and I kept asking Wanda, I said, Wanda, surely there's some ladies out at FedEx that would like to meet a nice older gentleman. Well, I kept on, and finally she said, I have a phone number I'm going to give you. Well, she gave me that phone number, and it's a lady I'm married to today, and I could have gone the world over. We've been married almost 17 years, and that's another thing God and AA was doing for me. Anyway, we enjoyed Memphis. A lot of my friends here that I met in Memphis, and it's meant a lot to me. I mean, that's where I really learned about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wouldn't take anything for it. Anyway, my Wayne and I started. I never will forget. It was in my house. We going through the steps, and I told Wayne, I said, now, Wayne, I got something, one thing that I'm not going to tell you. He said, oh, yeah, you got to do that. I said, no, I'm not going to, you got to do it. We got over at my house, and I did, doing the fifth step with him. I got down to that point, and I said, Wayne, I don't believe I can do it. You got to do it. You'd have to know his voice. You know, he had a strong voice, kind of like my friend George, but we're going through it. I said, okay, I'm going to tell you. He said, nobody. He said, I've probably done the same thing. So I told him. When I got through, I said, now, did you ever do that? He said, hell no, I ain't ever done nothing like that. I hate to use the H word, but that just, for those of you that know Wayne, that's exactly what he said. But like I said earlier, we developed a friendship, and I wouldn't say that was the kind of person it took to help me get sober and stay sober. I met my wife, as I mentioned, there in Memphis, and then we went to her mother. She wanted to go back to, she wasn't real crazy about going, felt like we need to go back, help take care of her mother. She's 96 years old. We've been living there almost 7 years. She lives by herself. She has macular degeneration. She can't hear. Lives in a 70-year-old house. So I'm always trying to find somebody to fix something on that house because I can't. Told Earl, I can't fix anything. Don't want to. But anyway, we live there in Lebanon. You know, when I got to Lebanon, there's a guy up there, he don't mind me using his last name, a guy named Jimmy McDowell. I went out to see Jimmy. I wanted to talk. I knew he was in AA, and he told me, you know, about the different AA and everything. And it is good. It's where I met my friend Duke and a lot of other good people. The thing about AA, it's everywhere. I do miss the AA in Memphis, but I'm pretty satisfied with AA there in Lebanon. They don't always do things like I want done, but that's all right. You know, there's a lot of young people now. And anyway, my wife and I, if we got married, we went to Lebanon, and it's been a good experience. Been a real good experience. And you know, there's so many things that I'm grateful for today. I can remember, I'm going stepping back a little bit now, but Wayne and his sponsor was a guy named Franklin Williams. I got to know Franklin, and I really used Franklin a little bit after Wayne died as a sponsor until he died about 3 years later. He and a guy named Joe McCoy from Tulsa. But anyway, I never will forget Franklin was there in the hospital and had two guys that I was sponsoring. I took with me up to visit with him. We went in there and Franklin's laying there. Now, Franklin was a circuit speaker. I mean, he went over everywhere. He got to tell me, he said, Jerry, you're really working a good program. You're doing good. And I've got these two guys that I sponsor behind me. I'm wanting them to hear every bit of it. And he got through bragging on me, and I never will forget this either. He said, it was his right hand, he said, Jerry, don't you ever forget where you came from. And you know, if it gets bad today, I can think about being in that apartment in St. Louis, being so sick, and all the good things that's happened for me. You know, that's what it's all about. Another time, I never will, I've been sober maybe 2 years. These are the things you learn. Franklin was going to make a talk out in Tahoe, Nevada, California, whatever it is. So Wayne and I decided we're going to go with him. Well, let me tell you, you take those two guys around, you got your hands full. So anyway, we go to Tahoe, and Joe McCoy came from Tulsa, and Franklin talked on a Saturday night. Next morning, Joe went back to Tulsa, and I told Franklin and Wayne, I said, now, any of these shows you want to go to out there, they had three, they had Gail, Loretta Lynn's sister, whatever, the Crystal Gail was at one place, and some other big name at another, and the other one, they had a little upscale burlesque thing. Well, I knew which one they'd want to go to. But anyway, that afternoon, Wayne said, I believe I'm going to stay here and watch TV. And Wayne had been complaining from the whole time we left Memphis. Franklin looked at him, he said, Wayne, you've been complaining all weekend. He said, I don't know what's the matter with you. He said, but you know what? He said, I believe a good drunk might help you, and I like to have it. I'm in the room. I didn't know you talked to anybody like that. So I called a cab that came downstairs, and Franklin and I went down to get in the cab, and Wayne was up on the balcony. He came out, and he said, boys, I believe I'll go with you. But anyway, those are things that you don't ever, ever, ever forget. My friend Sparky, I remember over at Hickory Hills. How long was it, Bill? He'd been letting anybody make coffee for years. I was hoping he'd be here this weekend. But, you know, see if I can find it. It's something that I asked Franklin Williams before he died if I could use this. He said, of course, and I think people need to hear it. I think it's a beautiful piece of whatever you'd want to call it. This is the football story by Franklin Williams. The God of my understanding is getting up a football team. I'm going to make you the quarterback. I'm going to give you 3 men in the backfield that you lost during your act of alcoholism. I'm going to give them back to you in the reverse order in which you lost them. I'm going to give you hope, faith, charity. In the line, I'm going to give you 7 powerful men that you were introduced to in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you will use them, they will block out resentment, self-pity, intolerance, and impatience. At the two ends, I'm going to give you honesty and humility. At the two tackles, I will give you patience and tolerance. At the two guards, I will give you unselfishness and gratitude. At the center, I will give you willingness. It will be necessary to use willingness on every play. This game is going to last a lifetime. There will be no timeouts, so I'm going to give you some ground rules. Ground rules are the 10 Commandments. The first 4 will have to do with your relationship with your manager, God. The last 6 will have to do with your teammates. The ball is your external soul. the goalpost of the gates of heaven. Now get in there and play ball. He always ended by saying, ladies and gentlemen, I need each and every one of you in my search for truth in this game of life. If you don't believe this program will work, you just keep it simple and follow directions. If you don't think God will help you, just ask Him. Thank you for having me here today. Thank you.